Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tennis is brutal, and I think we can do nothing about it. Mm-hmm. I think it's brutal for everyone.
Yeah.
The way it's made, this sport is just... it's made to hurt. Sorry, but you're alone all the time on the court. The decision, responsibility, you miss, you win, you lose, you make a good shot, then you make a fence. I mean, this is... whole thing is a roller coaster in itself.
Welcome to Tennis Insider Club. I am Borja Duran, and together with my partner, Caroline Garcia, here is where tennis stories and life conversations intersect. Join us as we uncover the untold personal journeys of the icons of the court. From laughter to life lessons, it's all here.
Today we have with us Alizé Cornet. It was a big pleasure to have her. I have shared many moments with her during our careers, sometimes as an opponent and others as a teammate. And I have always learned a lot from her. I am so happy to share here with you a very deep and honest conversation where we talked about tennis, mental health, what's next for her, and much more. Hope you will enjoy it as much as we did. Hello, Alizé. Thank you so much for being here with us. For me, it's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah, super excited about
it. Thank you, guys, for inviting me. I'm very honored to be part of this podcast.
Big pleasure. You were always one of the first ones we had on our checklist.
Yes.
So we're happy to have you finally here.
Thank you.
I think you just announced some big news. Maybe you can share a bit more about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's time for me to retire from professional tennis. That's a decision I've been thinking about for the past months, maybe even years. Mm-hmm. But I was not quite feeling the timing yet. And like this past 6 months, I've been thinking about it really a lot more seriously. And it seems right to me to stop at Roland Garros because mm-hmm. I couldn't dream of a better ending, you know, mm-hmm. Stopping at home in front of my family, my home crowd. In this tournament that I've played, I've played 20 times. Like, it's gonna be my 20th time in May. Mm. So yeah, it feels a bit weird, but I'm very okay and in peace with this decision.
Yeah, no better place than home, I guess. Can you like walk us through this process? Because I guess it has to be super complicated to take such a big decision when you've been doing this for, as you say, 20 years, and on top of that, all the years before as a kid trying to make it. So. Can you explain us a bit like how you get to this decision, why you start thinking about it?
Maybe that's the reason that I did it for 20 years. Maybe that's also the reason why I want to stop. It's because I feel that I gave everything I had to give to this sport. Mm. And I was listening to your podcast, Caroline, the first one you did. And I could relate to what you said about having no regrets. Mm-hmm. For me, that was the most important thing in my career, is to finish when I would feel that I had give everything and that mm-hmm. I would have no regret in the future. And I think I got to I got to this moment. Mm-hmm. And it was a long process because I first started to think about retirement in 2022.
Okay.
2 years ago.
Why was that already?
It was supposed to be my last season because I felt I was tired. I was worn out.
Okay. At the beginning of the season? Or?
Yes, at the end of 2021. I was tired from the tour, from practices. I think I didn't have a coach at that time. I was a bit lost. I had a difficult experience with my previous coach. And I felt like it was time for me. And for some reason, I did one of my best seasons in 2022.
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, it was pretty good times.
Yeah. First quarterfinal in Australian Open, and then third round Paris, fourth round Wimbledon, third round US Open.
Beating Iga in Wimbledon.
Yeah, beating a lot of good players. And I was like, whoa, I mean, it's pretty...
I'm on fire.
Stop. I'm not sure. I could. I was almost top 30 and... And I was having fun most of the time on the court, so I decided to play one more year.
Okay.
But then it came back. You know, the tiredness and the fatigue that I had, I played a little less good and it came back.
Do you think maybe you played this best year because you kind of know it was maybe the last one? Did you feel different through the year?
Yeah, you maybe know, just trying to enjoy and not thinking too much, no?
It could be, you know. I have a very clear image of myself in Australian Open. 2022, going on the court in against Muguruza.
Okay,
you know you have this long corridor going to the road laver, and there's all this picture of this the previous winners, and I was looking at the picture and I was smiling like, oh, this is the last time I'm doing that. This is so good.
Yeah.
I'm so lucky. It's I was in a mood that I just wanted to enjoy every moment, and I never had this feeling before. I played one of the best matches of my season, of course. It's not random. No, but really, sometimes I'm like, I'm forcing myself to smile before going on court, but it doesn't work the same. I guess I had a really, I was feeling something from the inside that I knew it was the end. I mean, I thought so. And I just wanted to
embrace
you know,
it.
Take it all, embrace it. So, yeah, I it's probably why I played my best tennis that year in the slam. It's because I was so excited to play those tournaments, convinced that it would be the last year, that maybe my game was just, you know, more relaxed and I was playing more freely. And but then, yeah, as I said, in 2023, the adrenaline went down a little bit again. And
you started 2023 like as your last year as well, or no? Or it was like, okay,
not anymore. So it's strange, right?
Strange.
Because then I was like, okay, you're not going to trick yourself again. You know you're lying to yourself. So just stop saying that. You will, the next time you say that, it will be true.
The woman who will retire
in 10 years,
times.
It will be, but it will be true.
I didn't want to make myself believe.
So are we certain this time, like 2024?
Now it's announced, dog. I'm not going to come back on that decision. But no, yeah. In 2023, I was like, let's play and see how it goes. And it didn't go really well, to be honest. But now it's funny because this year I knew it would be the last. But maybe
you make semifinals in Paris.
We never know. Then there's going to be the Olympics. No, but it's funny because maybe I pushed myself a little bit more, a little bit too much, sorry. And this year I didn't have this excitement of the potential last year. It was like I pushed it a little too far.
Yeah.
Maybe last year was the extra year that maybe I shouldn't have played. I don't know.
Yeah, also you are a bit lower at the ranking. You're not able to play some tournaments.
Yes.
So qualies is not as exciting, unfortunately.
It's not.
And maybe that feeling of the last time, it's already done 2 years ago.
I think you cannot just, you know, pretend like two or three times to,
And maybe also this time, no, it's like so true that it's the last time, right? That maybe like, because I guess it's also kind of scary, no, to like, okay, how's life going to be the day after I leave the racket?
Yeah, no, it's weird. I'm going through a freaking roller coaster at the moment. And it's been the case my whole career because, I mean, you know.
I think for any tennis player, no.
Yeah. Well, now it's like...
Even
times
worse.
10. Usually it's the roller coaster because you win, you lose, you think you suck, and then you think you're good, and then you all these things about tennis player. But now it's more a roller coaster about, okay, what is it going to be after my career? What am I going to do? Am I going to miss it? Am I making the right decision? And then the day after, I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait for it to be done. Ooh, vive la retraite, which in France is like, please let the retirement come. And it's like one day I'm doubting, and the next day I'm sure. Doubting, sure. Mm-hmm. And even though, like, deep down I'm 100% sure, it's still scary. And I think it's normal. It's been my whole life.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you care about it. You're passionate about tennis. Like you say, it's been 20 years and even more when you was a little girl. Mm-hmm. So it's our daily routine that is going to actually not happen anymore, and we are going to be stuck at home, and what are we going to do our life, not living in a suitcase anymore.
Yeah, all these things that I'm sometimes complaining about, actually,
yes, exactly,
that I'm going to miss. The routine thing, as you said, it's a bearing in my life. It's like, you know, I wake up, I know what I'm going to do almost hour per hour. I know exactly where I'm going, but this unknown is also nice. Mm-hmm. You know, to leave the door open to opportunities, to do something that I didn't have time to do before, writing more books, maybe.
I think this is super interesting, no? Because in your case, you already have like other things besides tennis, because I think that's not the case for most players.
Yeah.
So that
was, I have this writing things that I've been writing novels for the past 4 years.
You have two books already out?
Yes. Nice. Yes. I mean, the 2nd of May, the second was out. So
that's impressive.
Yes. Yes.
Congrats.
That's very cool. And
what is it, the book about?
Oh, it's the
Come
second
on,
one.
You have 1 minute to
the second one
to
is about
your book.
Let's keep it short. It's about three people aged between 20 and 30 years, and you follow them over 10 years. You follow their like journey through the questions that you can have at this age, like if you want to be a parent. It's three friends, and two of them, they're about to be a bit more than friends. They want to be lovers, but they don't, because they want to protect their friendship. You're gonna
sounds
like
complicated.
It it's not so complicated, it's just life, you know? Life. And maybe I will write a second one, because I want to tell their life in between 20 and 30, and then between 30 and 40.
Okay, see
and
how
then
it
between
works.
40 and 50. So
nice,
that they grew up with me a little bit.
Yeah.
Is it only in French or only also in English?
Yes, sorry. Not in Spanish version.
Well,
not in English.
Well, for the French listeners, where can they buy it?
French, it's available, and no, for now, not in other languages.
Okay. You have to make it happen in English now.
I don't decide of this. Like the editor house has to. I mean, some American editing house has to buy the rights of the book.
Okay.
So it's complicated. It's
okay,
a whole
so
new
book editors.
World.
Hurry up!
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to see two different worlds, like the sport one and the more like artistic one.
Mm-hmm. You think that's going to be your focus after tennis, writing?
Not completely.
Not full time.
No, not full time. I want to stay in tennis. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to stay in tennis. I want to share my experience.
As a coach?
Maybe not as a coach. Maybe as something else. I don't know. I haven't quite figured out yet, but I think everything that I've learned on myself, on others, on tennis, I think I have a lot to share, and it would be a waste not to do it. So I just have to find the way that I like to be able to...
Maybe writing a book also about your tennis career. Can
that could be an idea. I did it already, actually, in 2019.
Okay.
I wrote a book about tennis, but it was more like a diary. And it was nice. I also want some human contact, you know, not only writing. You know?
But do you think when you started that artistic part of your life also, and having something outside of tennis, it helped you to deal with losses, to have a purpose outside and get identified outside of being just a tennis player?
I'm not sure about being identified
more
as
like
something
as
else.
But yourself.
Because I think people, even if I write 20 books, I think they will always see me as the tennis player.
Yeah.
That's the feeling I have.
But more for you as
for
a...
Me,
for
me. It was more a way to deal with the loss a little bit easier, because I knew I had something else to escape, you know. I had another world to dive in. And when sometimes, even when I was on the court, it was not going well, I was like... You know, for an instant, I was like, it's okay. After that, you can just go on your laptop and write your stories and just
nothing change.
Yeah, escape in your own world. And it was something that was comforting in a way. But also the fact to have something else, it was a bit reassuring, because I knew that maybe I was good at something else too. And it helped me not being so focused on tennis all the time.
Yeah.
And also not just this escaping fact, you know, to have a way of not thinking about tennis and be happy doing something else. That was
Yeah, I don't think it's even skating. I think, besides for tennis players or athletes, that's what most of humans have. No, they have like their job from 9 to 5, and then after they have hobbies, they have a family or something. Yeah,
exactly.
So I think for sure, like having other things probably also helps you perform, but also as a human being, it keeps you sane.
But for me, it's a good thing that I chose writing, because when you're on tour,
you can do it easy.
Yeah,
where does
40
it come
weeks
from?
A year, you cannot do a hobby like. You know, you're on tour, you're in Indian Wells, Miami for 5 weeks. What do you do if your hobby is to surf? I mean, you can surf in California. It's not a good example.
But sailing or whatever, it's complicated.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
I can do it remote from everywhere. And it's not the case of every hobby. So.
No, I agree. I mean, it's something I've been suffering lately, because now that I travel mostly on tour all the time.
Yeah, hobbies, it's complicated.
I don't know how to do my hobbies anymore.
We have to play paddle, by the way.
Yeah,
very
we
soon.
Have to. We have to.
I agree. This afternoon will be one.
This is another hobby of mine that I love.
It's so fun.
Yes.
Maybe we can see you as a paddle player in the future or not.
Who knows? I'm full of resources.
We already saw that.
That's cool. Yeah. I think we can jump back to the start and understand how you started in this tennis.
Oof. You want to jump back 30
years
ago?
Yeah, back to the beginning. How did Alize become a tennis player?
Oof. A pro or just starting playing tennis?
Yeah, like how did you start playing tennis, and then how was your journey to pro? Because it was a successful beginning.
So let's try to, you know, do it short, because it was a long journey. But I started playing tennis thanks to my brother. Mm-hmm. Which is 12 years older than me, and he was playing tennis himself and also basketball, which I did both, of course, because I wanted to do the same than my brother. He was my hero and blah, blah, blah. So I started tennis, but I ended up being much better than him.
Tennis. Sorry, brother.
He was more like a smart guy. I don't say I'm not smart, but he studied and he became a doctor, a scientist.
Nice.
So he also succeeded on his side. But so I started tennis, love at first sight. I loved it. Mm-hmm. Climbed my way up a little bit without thinking about tomorrow, just playing, having fun.
Okay.
I was a very physical player already from the very beginning, same than now. I mean, I was fast, I was endurant, I had a lot of stamina, I was driving my opponent crazy, making myself crazy too, crying on the court, drama every matches, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to win so bad. I was very, very competitive, almost sick, you know, almost sick of competitiveness. And then it went really fast. Played my first Roland Garros when I was 15.
Winning your first round.
Winning
already,
my first round, losing to Amélie Mauresmo.
I remember. I watched that on TV.
Well, so you were like 12.
Yeah, but I remember, because you were very young.
Yeah.
So, and obviously everyone, like all TV, you were talking about it. And on top of it, you were playing Amélie Mauresmo, who was number one French, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
And very expected every single time in Roland Garros. Mm. And I mean, your face, you look like so young.
I know.
So that was literally a baby.
Yeah. So for me, it was also like... Mm. It's not like identify yourself, but it was very,
I
remember
very
clearly.
It was very inspiring for you, no?
Yeah, it was very clear.
I hope you told yourself, okay, in 3 years I'm there. I hope I could inspire some young girls
it's possible. And it's like, I was 12.
Maybe you also depressed some girls, no?
I'm late.
16, like, okay, I'm not making it.
You know, you're saying that, but this is true.
I agree.
Keep comparing yourself to others all the time.
Yes.
You're always later than someone.
Mm-hmm.
And you're always a bit worse than someone in something.
Did it happen to you? Because I guess when at 15, winning your first round in Roland Garros, a lot of pressure starts.
Well, between 15 and 19, I was very good. I came there very early and I had very good results. I was top 20 when I was 18,
nice.
11 in the when I was 19. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really need to compare myself. I was doing great. You know, it was all good. It was a highway of success. But then when it got complicated and when my ranking started to drop, then I started to compare myself. I started to judge myself a lot more.
And why do you think like this happens? Like we're being 18, 19 years old, being almost
My opinion is that I put the bar so high
Yeah.
that when I didn't match my expectations anymore, I was just considering myself
too hard on yourself,
super bad.
Right?
Yeah. So are you comparing yourself to the one you were when you were 11 in the world, or to
both,
other
yes.
people?
Yes, I was comparing myself to the players that I used to be when I was playing at my best, and also the players of my age or something that was just playing better than me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why? I mean, I was one of the best 2 years ago, and now I'm 80 in the world, and they're still there. Radvanska, Wozniacki.
Okay, no, that's also. Oh.
That's my generation. Okay. It was a good generation. Vitova, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, what am I doing there? I was mm-hmm. with them a few months ago, maybe 2 years ago, and this was, I think, without these thoughts, maybe I would have came back a little faster, but it was killing me, you know, the fact to just stay focused on the negative things. And especially because it was a lot of drama for nothing, because I was still in the top 100 at 20. Mm. Some players never get there.
No.
But I put the
ball so high. Share.
Me?
I don't relate at all. But I'm not going to see.
In your case, you were even fourth in the world and you were like thinking you were shit.
Yeah, but she was saying it's never enough. You'd always want more. This is addictive. No, but I relate to that too. It's a
No, I agree.
You don't realize when you're there, it's never enough. And when your ranking drops a little bit, you're like, oh my God, I should have been happy to be there. I didn't enjoy the moment.
Exactly. I think it's the balance between two things. I think you can want more, right? I think that's healthy, but also understand being realistic on where you are, and not, like, it's not black or white, you know? It's I want to be better, but I'm still quite good.
We kind of learn you, even from a very young age, that you have to keep growing and go higher and higher and higher. But at one point, you're up there and like, there is like, so when you're 11, there is 10, you can lost again 10 girls only.
Yeah.
When I was 4, it was 3. It's like, well, at one point, maybe you... And now it's way more common to read about it. It's like you have to accept that you will go down to go higher after. But most of the times, that's not what you learn as a young girl or young boy. It's like you always have to go higher. And then it's at one point, it's almost impossible.
Mm. I was definitely not prepared for that. Yeah. I was not prepared how to handle the success, but also the failure.
You think arriving to the top that early didn't help? Like
my way. I don't regret it.
For sure.
I think I could have been mentally a little bit better prepared.
That's what I meant.
Yes,
that if you get there with 24.
Yes, I was just.
I think
it was not easy, but it went so fast that I didn't have to prepare myself of any other scenario that could happen, you know, and also.
I think Ons was sharing something very interesting regarding this, that it took her a while to reach the later stages of the slams, to arrive to the top 10, right? And probably when she got there, she was like mentally ready, grateful also because of all the hard work. No, if you arrive super early without too much work, kind of. Mm-hmm.
Say that.
No, I mean, people didn't see, you know. I don't know how you do this, but yeah, no, but quite early. Maybe you feel, as you say, entitled. You think you deserve to be there, you know.
You had more experience also in your personal life. I mean, at 25, at 25, you're not the same person.
You're not a kid.
No, as when you're 19 or 20, you didn't see anything when you're 20.
And you understand how hard it is to get there, right?
Yeah.
And,
but that's also what happened to me because so I dropped a little bit when I was 21, 20, 21, 22. It was 3 really tough years for me.
Mm-hmm.
But then I climbed my way up. Mm-hmm. At 24, I came back in the top 20.
Mm-hmm.
And then I earned it, like,
I earned it. I worked for it.
No,
I'm kidding.
It was out of context, but huge respect.
I'm teasing you about it. But you know what I mean?
I worked hard in my life and I never got any close to top 20 of anything in the world. So
just saying that at 24, it was not, it's like I had two different careers. So it was really funny.
Were you happy there when you arrived top 20 at 24? Are you satisfied with it?
Yes, I was proud of myself because I overcame, I did a little bit of a depression at one point. I was very depressed when I was on tour and everything. And especially I was proud of myself because I left the south of France to go to Paris to practice in Roland Garros with 2 coaches for 3 years. And I mean, I am very, very close to my family.
Mm-hmm.
I am very conservative about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And leaving my region to go to Paris was for me like the biggest sacrifice.
Okay.
But I knew that I had no future there. And I made this decision and it paid off because after 2 years, I was back in the top 20.
Nice.
And then I felt like it was such a reward, you know, from the sacrifice, the work, and it felt totally different from the first time that I was in the top 20. Totally different. It was like I was a different player. I was enjoying a bit more my time on the tour. As you said, I was 24 and I was just a different person.
Yeah, you were probably proud of getting out of your comfort zone, yeah. Trying to do something very different, which is always scary in life. But in sports also, as you know, you will not be able to play until you're 40, 50.
Yeah.
You don't want to try to lose time.
Mm.
And yeah, I can understand that, yeah. It makes you, made you proud.
And then actually, I had a great time in Paris. Like, much better, yeah. Than what I thought. Yeah, okay. I was practicing with Georges Gauvin, Pierre Chéret, Nicolas Perrot, and I remember having such a good time. I didn't expect being so happy there. So it convinced myself that sometimes you're scared of the, you know, you're envisioning something and it never happens the way you see it. You know,
yeah, it rarely happens the way you
exactly.
Think.
I mean, life is always what's happening when you expect the opposite, right? That's the saying. But, and I was like, okay. It was hard when I had to make the decision of getting out of my comfort zone. But when I was there, it was great. And I saw myself improving and having the reward from it. And that was also very satisfying for me. So, no, but then I came back to the South because I cannot stay in Paris for too long.
I want to see, you mentioned the word depression. Tennis is brutal, I think, yeah. With mental health. Can you walk us a bit like through it? Has it been something?
It was tough. Okay. What was your question? Sorry.
No. Like, I think this is one of the more under discussed topics in tennis. No, pressure. Yeah, but tennis is a brutal sport in a way that you lose every week.
Yeah.
You are away from your family, your friends, pretty much the whole year.
Yeah, it's a very very lonely, very lonely world. And also, I think the difference between tennis and other maybe team sport is that. You have the tendency, and we talked about it a few times, but to identify yourself to what you do instead of what you are as a person.
Yeah. Your worth as a human is your last result, your ranking.
Exactly. And when you're a teenager, it's like even worse because you still don't really know who you are. Mm-hmm. You know you're a successful tennis player. So the easiest way to see things is that, okay, I'm a good person because I'm a good tennis player. And I had to work super hard on this to really separate both things, and to realize that I was worse as a human being, that I was funny and smart and nice person. And this is still not easy to say that right now because it's like my brain is resisting. It's like, no, you're not, but yes, I am.
How did you work on this? Like, what's the advice you would give to younger players in order to improve this and have a more happy life regardless?
My way of working on it was, especially I met Jonathan Lehmann, which is he's an author, and he had a really, let's say, interesting journey about meditation and, let's say, existential question. And I met him a little bit randomly because of his book. And this guy changed my life, I would say, because I was 28 and I still didn't really know who I was at 28, which is quite late, right?
Yeah.
And I was still suffering from this identity, this mix of identity between tennis player and human being. And we just... It didn't feel like working on something. It was more like discussions all the time. Discussions about life, discussions about tennis, who I was. And actually, we did that for a year. And it opened my mind to a lot of things, a lot of things. So it was more for me, someone that I met and that changed my life. But it can be, you can do this work. You can go see a psychologist.
Definitely.
You can do meditation. I did sophrology. I did hypnosis. I tried so many things to feel better mentally. I mean, that was the main goal of my career, was to feel better, just to feel better.
Yeah, because I mean, at the end, if you're not happy or you're not enjoying, everything is worthless. Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, 20 years from now, you will probably regret if you threw away 20 years of your life just to win some stupid trophies in a way, you know? Like,
You were talking about the depression earlier, and I didn't quite answer that, but when I was between 19 and 22, I was having a really rough time and I didn't have the tools to get out of it. And actually the tool that I found was to leave the South and to go to Paris, practice with new
everything.
People, changing everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
not sure it really fixed the problem.
I think maybe it helps in the short term, right? Because it distracts your brain a bit, it challenges you a bit, but the problem is still there.
It was still there. The results that I had was comforting me, and it was it was like putting a bandage.
Mm-hmm. It's like hiding the problem for a while.
It was brave for me to make that choice, leave my home and stuff, but I was not working on the real problem that put me in this depression, which was... Who am I and what am I going to do if I don't play tennis?
Yeah.
Are people going to still like me?
Yeah.
And all these questions. So I actually really started to work on it much later.
Mm-hmm.
Way too late, to be honest. I think it should be a priority as a kid, as a tennis player, to work on that, to just make healthier player.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, to grow your own identity as a person, to be able to disconnect also from your result of... doesn't make you who you are.
Yeah.
You do play tennis, but you are a person. You're Adize, I'm Caroline, whatever. And it's hard to do it all together because tennis takes a lot of time for us, practice, etc. And I think it's getting more common now to talk about it, to be open about it.
Mm.
But yeah, it takes time. And
yeah, no. So like, I think regarding tennis, maybe like, focusing less on the results and more on the process, no?
On the journey.
Taking it day by day, enjoying training, enjoying like, the process. And because if you obsess too much on a certain result, no? If I don't win this, I'm not good, blah, blah, blah. It's probably not a healthy relationship with tennis, even if you have a good understanding of who you are and what makes you a good person, no?
I think back in the days also when I started to play, tennis coaches were not so aware of that.
Exactly.
It changed a lot in the past 5 years. I think we had a huge improvement.
Yeah, mental health is starting to be a priority.
Yes, because I had the chance to have a really good education, to have loving parents, loving brother. So I had a really healthy environment.
But still you were not seeing them much, right?
Yeah, and still I had depression.
Mm-hmm.
So your parents, they can't do everything because...
Were they aware of this struggle or were you hiding it?
They were aware and they tried to help me. My mom told me to quit tennis 100 times.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're a mother and you see
care about him being happy.
You see your kid destroying himself because of a sport. You're like, wait. She was like, good, study. You were good at school. You can do anything.
I agree.
And I was like, no, I want to be miserable. I want to play tennis.
It's not black and white. In the middle, there's probably like playing tennis and enjoying life and being happy.
No, but seriously,
she can relate a lot to that.
I want to be miserable. I want to be out there suffering.
Yes.
We are a little bit masochistic. We like the pain in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we like this permanent challenge and that's why I know that I'm done with tennis. That's why I know I'm done right now. It's because I don't like it anymore.
Okay.
I liked it for 20 years. I loved it. I embraced it. I swam in it. But I just, when I'm on the court now, I don't have the mental resource anymore because it was so much pushing myself and pain and challenge in the past. And that now I see it. My tennis is almost the same right now. I've been losing a lot this year, but my tennis is there. But mentally,
you don't want to fight that much anymore.
And even if it's 10 or 20% less, it's huge at this level.
Yeah.
And girls are so competitive.
And actually, this part was a huge part in your game because on court, you were a very passionate player.
90% of my game.
You were fighting a lot and trying like until the end of the end.
Hmm.
And if you say this part is kind of gone, you're not the same.
Yeah.
It's maybe not gone completely, but it's...
It's very fragile. I know that the one who will have to get you out of Roland Garros will have to be ready to fight for 5 hours. It's like, I don't know who's like the lucky one.
Like Rafa said a couple of weeks ago, if there is a place to die, it's Paris.
Yes, exactly. He said it yesterday also as well.
Yeah,
definitely. And... yeah, I think probably this fighting, no, it's what made you a very challenging player also with top 10, top 20 players, no, because you have an unbelievable statistic, no, of winning top 10 players. I think you won 4 times the number one in the world, which is quite impressive.
And 25 top 10.
Wow. How many did you do?
Top 10?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I have one
probably more than me, but I wouldn't
have sure.
The same.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. To be honest,
I have one top one.
Yeah.
Okay. I have Iga.
So you're away.
Iga. It's true. I remember where it was at her home place yes. in Poland somewhere.
Yeah, mm. Warsaw.
Voilà.
But top 10, I'm not sure. But yeah, like, did you go to these matches with a different mindset?
No, I think for me, it's very simple to answer that is that I always felt in my career that I was most of the time winning, like you said, with my fighting spirit.
Yes.
But I was most of the time losing because I was playing, with, in French, we would say that with a break, you know, I was mm-hmm. playing always with limits in my head, like limits of
fear. You would say?
Fear. Let's say, yeah, let's just call it fear.
I was
with fear. No, but it's true. So then my shots were not as clear as at practice. I was not hitting the ball as well with that much power. I mean, in practice, everything seems much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And with the emotions that I had on the court, the fear, the anger, the expectations, the frustration, everything that can happen on the court, my level was dropping and I was always playing with this kind of fear. But when I come on the court against number one, where is the fear? In the locker room.
Expectations. Voilà. Yeah, you have no expectations.
No expectation. Yeah. I'm not supposed to win. I'm supposed just to go out there and deliver what I can deliver and whatever. Eyes are on her anyway.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I can only produce a miracle. And that's why I played my best game.
Yeah.
Because I was playing freely. Of course, when I was about to win, I had these emotions coming back because it's of course, I was realizing what I was about to do, but still playing that freely was just the most amazing feeling. And I think that tennis wise, I was always able to produce this kind of matches, but I always had this break and this fear mentally that prevent me from doing it all the time.
Yeah.
And that's why my carry is good, but is always a little bit up and down, you know, because I couldn't quite deal with my emotions on the court. And I feel it was the real limit in my career. Even if I worked on it, even I'm a very emotional person.
The more pressure you have, the more emotions you feel. So it's
totally
not easier.
And this, even though I worked on it, I not found the right way to be as stable as I wanted to.
You talk about these emotions and pressure. How easy it was for you to handle like the external pressure, like media, social media.
Well, when I started tennis, social media didn't exist.
Yeah, it was a better time.
It was a good time.
Yes, it
because
was.
The worst thing you could read was in L'Équipe, the French journal, sport journal, a newspaper, sorry. And, you could
easy
just,
not to read it.
Whoop, you didn't buy it, you didn't read it.
Yeah.
It was so much easier. Really, I'm a little bit nostalgic of that time, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
Because now it's just hatred everywhere.
Which at the end, it's funny because it's our decision to also be there. Like we could definitely tomorrow say, okay, you know, I want to be like the other day. I was reading about Manchester City player Rodri. He's from Spain, and he's not on Instagram. He's not on Facebook, you know. And he went to university. I mean, he's one of the best players in the Premier League, you know. But he's out of social media. He's been married or dating the same girl for 10 years.
It's a choice we make, but
we are also part of the problem because we decide if we stop being there, if we stop exposing ourselves.
You're totally right. Being out of the system would be the best choice, probably.
But we're addicts as well.
It's kind of addictive.
It is.
You know, and
Sometimes it happened to me that I just disconnected Instagram or Twitter for weeks.
And are you happy by it?
I was feeling so much better.
And then we go back to it. Yeah, it's
somehow,
insane.
For some reason, at one point, I was like, oh, I'm feeling better. Let's just activate it again.
I think we lie to ourselves that we need to be there, right?
Yeah, otherwise we will miss something, or maybe opportunities, professional opportunities, like someone is going to contact us for a contract, or I'm going to meet interesting people through Twitter, or... I think it's not true. I think the most interesting...
Well, for sure, there's some upsides, but probably the downside of being there, it's much bigger.
For an athlete, I think it's much bigger. I mean, right now, what we see, it's exponential. Yeah. I don't get it. I don't understand. I try to limit my time on this social media, but if you... I'm a little bit worried for a young generation.
Yes, I agree.
To be honest.
Yeah, because they're starting very young on it, on top of it, and sometimes you're not ready.
Does it affect you? I think because probably... One of the things like people don't understand if you're a fan is that like commenting on someone like can really have an impact on the mental health of this person, right? Like the only way I can believe someone is going to go on Instagram and say like some big stuff, some big attacks is because they don't realize that you're a human and that if you read it, it's going to affect.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I agree with you because I think some people, they just want to be mean on purpose.
Yeah.
I think, really.
Yeah, I always try to see the bright side. Yeah. But it's, I mean...
I'm glad you do. I mean, let's have some hope.
I try to understand, like, why someone, you know, like, can do that.
You make them lose money. It's enough. So they are mean. They're pissed. They hate you. They want to kill you because they lose $200. I swear that's it.
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, there are some people who always leave very nice comments and because they just follow you and they are passionate about your sport, about your way of being, etc.
And sometimes they will give some like feedback, which is not positive, but it's because they think they can help you, you know, which is ridiculous to think that, you know, more than...
As long as it's constructive, you can hear everything.
Yes.
You can.
It's already funny to like, as an amateur or as a fan, to feel that, you know, better than the player, than the coach, you know, me sometimes, you know,
I'm like, you can hear that.
Like sometimes she asks me, like, I'm not going to give you feedback on your tennis, you know, like, of course I have my opinion, but I also, I'm humble enough or I try to be humble enough to understand that I know, not I cannot say anything.
But at least it's freedom of expression.
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody
for sure.
should be able to say what they want if it's respectful and constructive. But when it gets to insults and threatening of whatever, killing your family, killing you, wishing you having cancer, that you crash in a plane. And this is, I mean, now that's I'm laughing about it because seriously, it's hilarious.
But probably after you lose and you're already like wanting to, in a way, kill yourself, not literal way, you know, but but you feel really bad about yourself reading these things. I mean, it's the last thing
you need. You are stable mentally, it doesn't affect you and it can make you laugh about it. Yeah. But it's true that sometimes, and that's where it's nice also to hear where people are getting better at mental health and getting a good identity construction as a person, is like that loss will affect you right after, but the next day you're ready to go practice again. You have been able to talk with your coach, know what you did well, what you can improve, and move on. You're not depressed for like 3 days.
Well, having hobbies, I think that's where it really helps you, because as she said, when she loses, she can go writing, and that's a way of...
Do something else.
Yeah. I'm still wondering how I would have reacted if if social media would have existed in my period of depression.
Yeah.
Because I was out of this. I mean, Facebook was barely existing. Yeah, it was. We had Facebook.
But it was healthier, I would say. Like, it was already more complicated to go and judge someone.
Betting was not that.
Betting was not.
Especially in tennis.
Yeah. But I just wonder if he would have just destroyed me even more. And probably, actually.
Should we ban this betting?
Probably tennis is getting bigger because of...
Yeah, and they're sponsoring tournaments. And I mean, this is, like you said, it's a circle. A vicious circle. We're a part of it, and we give. You know,
it's
insane.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Maybe at some point we need to put the red line. You know, and it's like not
something
not
else
everything.
Will come probably.
Yeah,
or we just stay out of it, as you said. I mean, we have the control. We can protect ourselves. You just delete your account, and you're done.
Yeah, or keep it for your friends also, or limit or don't allow people to comment because at the end you have the tools.
Yes,
but there's a reason behind it, which probably it's addiction to social media that doesn't want us to avoid this exposure. It's insane.
Yes.
Interesting topic.
Yeah.
Are you as competitive outside of the court as on court?
Not anymore. Asking for our padel matches.
Yes.
You know what? I'm really sad to say not anymore. And it's funny you ask me this question, Caroline.
Because on tour, on court, you're very competitive.
Yes, I'm still competitive. Not as much as before, but still. But I was talking about it with Pierre, my boyfriend, yesterday, and I was telling him, you know how I see that I'm done? It's because now when I play cards, I'm okay with it. Seriously, I said that. I play society game, I lose, I'm laughing, I'm okay with it. I was not like that 15 years ago. I was losing, I was like, oh, man. And I was just, you know, yeah. I wanted to win, like, mm-hmm. I wanted to win everything. And now it's either I grew older, which is a good sign, or maybe I lost a little bit of that fire, you know, which is also good because then you're a bit, you know, psycho. But
I don't think it's especially that some people are very competitive about something and about something else they don't really care. Me, cards.
But me, it was everything. And I feel the fact that I lose it in some other point makes me also lose it on the court. Maybe it's just a believing and it's a belief and it's not true, but still, I feel I'm getting softer.
I'm getting softer.
Yes, I'm getting softer.
I ran only 3 hours on court today. It used to be 3.5 hours. I'm a bit disappointed by myself.
Or maybe you're just prioritizing being happy, which is a good step, you know, because at
good
the
point.
End.
Good point.
I think, like,
I deserve
from the outside.
Yes, you do.
Me, I love competing. I love trying to be my best on whatever I'm doing. But also, I try to like understand that if it's going to cost me my mental health, my happiness, my relationships, like, that's not worth it. Anything, my business. And that's probably something that when you're a sports person, you're not being told that. No, you're being told that it's worth it, all the sacrifice in the world. And I agree, you have to work hard in life, you have to dream and fight. But at one point, it's like, okay. Like,
That's the price to pay if you want to do good. But I think at one point, you prioritize
probably
something
like
else.
Destroying your relationships is never worth like anything else, you know, and your mental health.
Oh, yeah. Well, it happened to me. I mean, in my previous relationship, tennis took a lot of room, too much, and it ended up being very toxic for us. Mm-hmm. So that's life. And actually, I learned from it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's why now I'm prioritizing other stuff because I don't want to live the same thing.
Yeah.
Losing a person maybe.
But do you think that, of course, now you're 33 and you feel probably that you already gave everything you have. But you think it's possible to have this balance when you're 23, 24?
It's a good question. I don't know. Because when you want something so bad, being a good tennis player, winning, and you think about it, you're possessed. Mm-hmm. You think about it day and night and you work for it all the time.
But at the same time, your best results come when you're more relaxed, more enjoying.
This is not necessarily. This is something that I also realized is that I didn't play my best tennis when I was the happiest one, me, because of this fear that I was talking about a bit earlier. Sometimes when something bigger in my life was happening, something negative, sickness of a parent or breakup or something bad, this fear that I was that I had when I was on the court was gone suddenly because something so much worse was happening in my life.
Well, but it's related. It's because you're putting the focus outside of tennis and that helps you play.
But so then I was not necessarily playing my best tennis when I was the happier, because when I was the happiest, like, all the lights were green. It was green light. I was supposed to have good results. And then, bam, pressure were coming in again.
Exactly. But it's pressure. So, I mean, so at the end, it's
fear, pressure.
Obsessing less about tennis. No, if when you're happy, you put, I'm happy, so I'm going all in and I want to be number one, you're putting pressure. No?
Well, but that's what I say. Sometimes I had great results when I was going through a tough time in my personal life because.
But I think probably that's the reason, because you're not obsessed about tomorrow's. You don't go to sleep thinking about tomorrow's match. You don't feel like everything it's about that.
The tennis result was just coming second.
Exactly.
But I also wanted to be happy, so it was it's fucked up, sorry for the bad word, but this is really,
but I mean, at the end, it's how it should be. I mean, I think tennis should be number two, and you still have,
I'm not sure, because can you really achieve amazing things if you put it at number
I think
two?
You can still work I think you no, can I still mean, work I'm... 10 hours you can still work 10 hours per day on your number two thing, because at the end, relationships or even a hobby, what is going to take 2 hours, 3 hours per
day? I mean, I agree with Alize, is like, especially when you're young and I mean, maybe someone in the future will prove us we are wrong, but we have learned to do it, and we always do it. It's like we have to put the time, we have to put our all focused in it, and it's spending, practicing, recovery, traveling to tournaments, no day off, no holidays. You have to do it because you have to do it. And if not, it's not going to pay off. But maybe in a couple of years, someone will arrive and they will have a different kind of schedule and prove us wrong. But for now, it's not happening. And everyone we see, it's people who bring time to the main focus. Tennis is number one.
Yeah. And you can see they're possessed, like their whole brain are on it, you know?
No, I mean, so first of all, I think you know say, better. But
maybe someone will come in a couple of years, but for now it is not.
No, but
can
for
see
me,
Iga, it's definitely someone very mainly focused about tennis.
Yeah.
All her day is related to tennis, and that's her main focus. And for now, I never saw someone make it to the top if he's not mainly focused about tennis, but maybe it will come.
No, but I mean, I think it can be kind of compatible because you can still work 10 hours per day, which I think it's enough in tennis. If you train 5 hours, you do recovery, blah, blah, and then have more, like, go on dinner with friends or with your boyfriend, guilt-free, you know, be more relaxed. And I don't know.
There's probably a healthier balance to find.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think if you're ambitious about something, you have to give yourself, you know, this space in your head, like it needs to be number one. There's no other choice. And as Caroline said before, it's only for only 10, 15 years of your life. So this makes also, it makes it also more special because you know that there's going to be an expiration date and you're like, I'm just going to give my all till the end. And then I'm going to be retired at 35 and my second life can start.
Yeah.
That's what's happening to me now. And at the end, I have, even if I was sometimes, as I said, miserable and unhappy sometimes and not completely in peace with what I was, I have absolutely no regrets because I lived my dream. 100%. I just gave everything I have, and now I know I can start my second life being, you know, very confident about what I gave to tennis, and
no,
not being
sure.
Like, maybe if I would have done things differently, I could have had a better career. No, it's okay. And
but still, you find ways to write books, to develop relationships, to other, like, exactly. That's what I'm talking. I'm not saying, you know, it's more about defining this balance of not putting like the 24/7 there, because probably that's too much, as it happened to you when you're younger stages.
And so tennis is brutal, and I think we can do nothing about it. I think it's brutal for everyone.
Yeah.
The way it's made, this sport is just, it's made to hurt. Sorry, but you're alone all the time on the court. The decision, responsibility, you miss, you win, you lose, you make a good shot, then you make a fence. I mean, this is, the whole thing is a roller coaster in itself.
So do you think, like, of course you cannot change how the game works, but do you think, like, maybe there's improvement to do, like, tour-wise, like, doing less tournaments, changing a bit the dynamics of, like, at the end you see Formula One and it's 20 races per year.
There is more and more tournaments, and I think that's not healthy.
Exactly. I think we should probably go on the other direction.
Before, in the old days, we had 2 months off.
Yeah.
Like between October and December and January, there were no tournaments at all. Huh?
Yeah.
Now you always have a 125, you have all the ITFs going on.
Exhibition tournaments.
Well, already the main season is longer. Before it was finishing end of October.
Mid-October. I remember Moscow was the last one and then the WTA finals.
Yes,
that's
and
it.
Now it's more like mid-November.
Yeah.
So already that, and now on top of it, they added in November, December, some smaller tournament.
Yeah.
And so, the season is definitely getting longer and there is more bigger tournaments that you have to play.
Yeah.
So it's harder to say no to a very big tournament.
Yeah, I agree. If you want to play 52 weeks per year, you can. And this shouldn't happen because you have to leave room for players to rest, be home, practice, be with their family. And of course, they want to earn money. They want to make a living. So they go play. But then it's too much. And well, that's it's not necessarily going the right direction in this way for me, the WTA, but I think they're trying their best.
You have more and more players now, like, living at the top and saying this is not worth it, this is too much. No, you had few cases, like Ashley Barty, Muguruza. Like, there's a lot of players right now actively saying, this is too much for me, you know, and
through your career, did you make some change in your schedule, in your plans of day off? Did you prioritize a little bit different sometimes your mind and body recovery?
Well, to be honest, if I had one regret, actually, I have one. It's this one. It's the scheduling. I wish I had changed something. I wish I had done something differently, at least for a few months, because I was lucky enough to never have a big injury. Mm-hmm. That's why I have this freaking record of the participation in Grand Slam. It's because I played from 17 to now, like nonstop Grand Slam without any injury. And the thing is that no physical injury doesn't mean that you don't need to take a break sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I kept playing. And I think I was one of the players that was playing the most per year, tournament wise. And I wish that at one point I had played less quantity and do maybe more quality or give myself a little bit more space to, as I said, practice and stuff.
I agree.
But I was always like, my philosophy was to go and try, go and play, go and have the hope that this
it will pay off one day.
This week it works.
Be a bit more strategic, know about your calendar and
be more strategic.
I think it was Djokovic, no, who said the other day after losing in Monte Carlo that he knows when he has to be like at his peak performance, no? And he chooses wisely. Yeah, I know, of course.
You have another example.
But
it's tough because
there's lessons to learn from him, you know.
Yes,
and
he's
a guy who last year is putting his priority in six weeks.
His confidence is so high. He knows so much what he can do. Me, my confidence was always a little bit my weakness.
Okay.
I was not confident enough to say like, okay, I'm going to skip this one and I'm going to get ready for the next one and I'm going to be super competitive and it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
I was always like, okay, the more I play and the more I have chances to make it work.
But if you're losing, that's not helping as well.
No,
probably
it's not
going in the wrong direction.
That's the thing.
I always discuss with her, you know, like, if you're like in a losing streak and you have like a Grand Slam 2 weeks from now, if you go to a smaller tournament, if you win it, awesome. But if you lose with a like lower ranked player, it's going to be even worse because you're going to go to the Grand Slam with even less trust, with even less motivation.
But you know what kills? It's the hope. Because the hope that it can click from 1 week to another, because we know that tennis, you play on a different surface with different balls in a different country every week.
Yeah.
Sometimes from one day to another, you feel like crap. And the next day you feel like you're god of tennis.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think like this, you're like, okay, but maybe I lost and I played a terrible match, but next week it can be a completely different story.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Tsitsipas. He didn't win a match of the whole year. And in Monte Carlo, suddenly he won the title.
It was unstoppable,
It's just an example, but you know.
But if you go to practice, because when I say like this of not playing this smaller tournament, maybe, I don't mean going on holiday. I mean going to train and get ready, you know, build this confidence, build this hope.
I agree with you because that's one of my regrets.
Yeah, exactly.
To have a more strategic scheduling and don't push that hard sometimes and be a bit more reasonable on my mind, on my body. That's the way it is. I had the choice to do it this year and I still didn't do it. So I think I'm a lost case. It's a desperate
case. After 20 years, for sure, it's not easy to change this.
Because the thing is, sometimes when we go in tournament in a row, but we lost quite early in the tournament, at the end of the tour, at the end of these tournaments, we felt we didn't play. Because when we played matches and when we practice in tournament, for us, it's not the same feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, I mean, you can lost against someone one day and in the next tournament, we can be 3 days later. You can play the same person and beat this person.
Yeah.
So there is always a, it will come, it will come, it will come. And at the end of the year,
sometimes it did.
Thanks God.
But on the other side, sometimes, and I think you've seen it sometimes, stopping for 2-3 weeks of playing tournaments and training and finding your happiness back on court, probably it's a better decision.
Yeah, for me also, sometimes I had trouble to really give myself 2 or 3 weeks of practice in a row. I was bored at one point. I needed the competition. I needed the adrenaline, the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also why I made that choice. I think that's part of my personality to want to compete.
Yeah.
But It's okay. I mean, I think on the moment I thought that I did what was best for me.
No, and it's always very easy to look backwards exactly. And say, I could have done that. But it's very easy to judge from the outside and also like from the future to look back. It's always...
I wish I could just see what it would have been like, you know, if it would have been different. It's too bad we don't have two lives and we can just experience.
It's hard to put in practice, trust me. It is hard because you feel like the other ones are playing, they are winning points, they are
what you feel.
Going in front of you in the ranking, and you're like, oh, there will be, have more rhythm, more confidence. Me, I will have just been practicing.
Yeah.
But at the end, you have to take risks sometimes. And at the end, you can try once. If it doesn't work, you move back. Also, you move back. Yeah. I think careers are long and you have enough time to like do a small test in a strategic week. Maybe you don't do it in the biggest moment of the season, but like giving
but this
try.
This also is hard to see, because it's hard to do, because you always see short term, and it's this fear we're talking about, it's also applying to that, to the scheduling.
Okay.
Am I making the right choice? You often think about 2-3 weeks ahead and not 6 months. I mean, that was my issue.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have long term plan,
which I think is super important.
Yeah, I agree.
Understanding which are your goals, no, and then plan a bit more.
Also, I could have been helped by a coach to do that. I was not making that choice alone. I think that coaches that were with me, they were supporting me in that way. Maybe if someone would have been like, okay, Alizé, I think we have a plan, we're going to do that this year, I would have, if I would have trusted the person, I would have respected it. But nobody actually guided me that way.
So, it's something newer also.
Yeah, most of people go on the safe, traditional direction. It's hard to find people who have the bold security, you know, of saying, okay, we're going to try a different way because they have more to lose than to win, probably.
Yeah, and like you say, you took the example of Djokovic, and the main reaction would be, oh, yeah, but it's Djokovic, or it's Serena, or it's Federer, and you don't really identify yourself as them. Maybe on the paper, you know, they did much better than you, but at the end, they are still humans, and they have also, maybe that's why they compete so well, is because they took care of also
other
as themselves, as person. And but yeah, I mean, it's tennis and it's sports. We don't always know everything, what is happening behind the curtains, and we wish we knew something.
That's why you have to invite in your podcast everybody. So
yeah,
that's our goal.
We have the testimony of all the players. And
that's the goal.
I'm so curious.
Yeah,
I cannot wait for that.
Us too.
Who would you like us to invite to the podcast?
I hope you wouldn't ask this question, because I don't have the answer.
You can have one woman, one man.
Yeah.
Present or past.
And then you have to be our ambassador to bring them here.
Present or past.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
Oh, it's too hard. I would say Justine Hénin.
Okay.
Because I liked her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she was also, we were talking about strategic scheduling. She was one of the ones to talk to me about it.
Okay.
Yeah, that she was playing. She was playing not a lot, Justine. Mm-hmm. She had like 15 tournaments a year. Yeah, but quality, huh?
Yeah.
And great player. I mean, small, you know, small, but so talented, and she's very smart. So I would love to hear her. And for a guy, I'm not going to say Rafa, because I think he's not going to say what's inside.
Deep inside.
Yeah, I don't think so. Well, Djoko is one of the most interesting players too.
I agree.
I'm not his biggest fan.
Yeah.
But
it's a very interesting.
And I think he worked so much on himself, and you would have a great time.
Yeah. I'm Spanish, so I've been a big fan of Rafa for a long time, but I have so much respect for Djokovic, and I think we can learn so much from him at the same time.
He's out of this world.
Yeah. As a person,
Rafa
as an
too,
athlete,
but in a different
way. Yeah, exactly.
He went some ways that was an explore before.
Oh.
And he brings so much to tennis, and he still does. It's like, it's unbelievable the way. So obviously your work is to bring Djokovic.
Yeah. Or if he's if for some reason he listens to this, we are waiting for you.
I don't know how I'm going to do that. It's going to be my retiring present.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Before your next book, that's your goal.
Wow.
Before ending, I'd like to know, what was the best moment of your career?
The best of... I have a couple.
Okay.
After all that, I still have a couple of really good moments, but... One really special one was when I qualified for my first quarterfinal. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to say when I beat Serena Williams in Wimbledon in 2014, mm-hmm. but I think this match against Simona Halep in mm-hmm. 2022 in Australian Open to help me qualify for my first quarterfinal was
in Slam.
In Slam. Was just crazy because I didn't expect that quarterfinal anymore.
On your retiring year.
In my supposedly retired.
Your first retiring year.
Exactly. And also because I played a fourth round and I never had the chance to qualify for a quarterfinal in Slam. Mm-hmm. I had match point when I was 19 on the same court in Rod Laver Arena against Dinara Safina. When I was 19, I had two match points to qualify for quarterfinal.
No.
I lost that match. And 13 years ago, I'm on the same court against Simona Halep, the same score.
No way.
Yes. And listen, this is really, I still have goosebumps. I'm 5-3 in the third, 15-40 on her serve. So I have two match points. Mm-hmm. It's the same score than against Dinara Safina from 13 years ago.
Did you think about it on the moment?
A little bit, but not so much.
Ah, good.
I do two. She does two amazing points. So she
is a classic.
Classic. I'm going for it and stuff, and she does like two amazing points. She saves the match point, and I'm 5-4. I have to serve for the match.
Oh boy!
And then I think about it.
I have trust in Alize's serve.
And then I think about it, and I'm like, I'm cool. You know what? I lived it once. Even if it doesn't work, I can overcome it again. You know, I didn't die from it.
Yeah.
And I won that match. But the relief that I had when I win the match was beyond everything that I experienced in the past.
Nice.
Because I had the feeling that all these ghosts from 13 years ago on the same court were finally, you know, with me and that I made peace with everything.
Yeah.
And what a beautiful story, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, to qualify at 32 for your first quarterfinal, it was a proof of such a resilience. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit my quality, and it was finally paying off. And I was like, thank God. So yeah, that was a really, really like emotional and powerful moment for me. Yeah.
And last question I want to ask is, what advice would you give to you if you were 15 again, arriving to pros?
Oh, Alize, what would I tell you, Alize?
Or what would you do different or whatever?
No, I like the advice thing because this is cool. I would just tell myself that I'm going to be okay, that mm-hmm. I'm going to be okay, and that I don't have to be the best all the time to be happy and a good person and mm-hmm. to be surrounded by great people that love me and all that, and that I shouldn't panic when it's not going well, mm-hmm. that I should trust the process and that it's going to be fine. You know, I had the tendency to be really like panicking really fast when I had a few losses in a row. I was like, oh, I'm done. I'm going to drop and whatever. I would have just told myself to keep cool and relax and, you know, but yeah, this is maybe also why I succeeded in a way.
For
it's
sure.
This urgency of winning and working hard, but
yeah sometimes it's hard to know if it's something that helps us or something that deserve and help us. The limit is always very thin, so
but it would have I think avoid me some pain mm-hmm. as a human being.
And
probably I wish I was a bit more serene. I wish I would have been a bit more serene at that age, you know. But otherwise, you know, you did good, Alize.
Yes.
It's good.
I think you can be proud of your career.
You can retire and be...
Congrats, yeah.
Yeah, you can be very proud of your career as a player, all the probably girls and boys that you have inspired, all the great... showed that he was on court. Fighting spirit was unbelievable every time.
Thank you.
I had the chance to witness it a couple of times in Fed Cup.
For me, staying on the bench was always very complicated. But watching you fighting for the win, fighting for your country and everything was very big. So big congratulations on your career and best of luck for the next part of your life.
Yeah. I think it's going to be as successful as this one.
I'm super excited to follow the next part of Alize's life.
We give you 2 seasons, 2 years, and then we come back and you can explain
what
us
is
how
coming
is it going.
Up. It's like, we make
a combo as a double player.
I think Padel it didn't work
or Padel.
Out.
I'm super excited for next part of the life of Alize.
Yeah,
for yours too. I think we're going to do great. It's not yet, though, guys. I'm not announcing anything.
Let's see.
It will happen. But the thing that makes me happy also is that I know we're going to stay friends.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
you were one of the great encounter I made in my career. Yeah. I need to say that there is not a lot. Hmm. And it's nice to see that also if you stop your career, well, we're still going to hang out sometimes and be friends.
Yeah,
it's comforting you. Like, I'm living a part of my life, but not all of it. And some people are going to remain.
No, it's just a change, but life keeps going.
There's connection, relationships that you made that you had the chance to make in this part of your life. And after they live on, you know, like when we see Amélie and everything, they are still connected to people on tour or their friend from this part of their life. And it's so great, you know, it's like you want to keep going. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Alize. It's
my
been an honor, and all the best for the future.
For you too.
Yeah. I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. It was a big pleasure to have Alize, and I hope, Caro, you also enjoyed it as much as I did.
Yes, I definitely did. It was a very interesting, very deep conversation, and a huge congratulations on Alize for an amazing career, and we really wish her the best on her second part of the life, and I'm sure she's going to be amazing.
Good luck, Alize. And guys, if you enjoyed this conversation, it would mean the world to us if you can share it with your friends or your family or anyone you think that can learn from such a great champion. And also, if you can find the time to leave a 5-star review on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you're listening to this, it will mean also a lot to us. Thank you very much and see you soon with our next episode.
See you soon.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.